Welcome to the USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast. USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast is the original podcast covering USC Trojans men's college basketball team and is available on such platforms as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and TuneIn, as well as at the USCHoops.com website. If you haven't done so already, we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a five-star rating and left a review on the platform of your choice. And a very happy Sunday, March 5th, 2023 to everybody. This is, I guess, the last podcast for the pre-conference games. So last regular season day of college basketball, I think. I don't think there's any game regular season games after today. So this is Chase, as always, joined by Nick. Nick, how are you doing?
Chase, I'm great. Good bounce back win for our Trojans last night over ASU. Got a little bit interesting there at the end, but at this point in the year, you just have to win and, you know, try to avoid any additional losses on the resume. But definitely had a fun weekend of games here, and we'll recap those and hit on some listener questions here as well.
Yep. So I think we'll start because we're now in the height of March Madness. I mean, I don't know the height, but we're going right into it. This was the last weekend of regular season games. It's come to a conclusion today, and we're heading into tournament week for the, some of the schools are, conferences are already in tournament week, but height for the power conferences, they start their tournaments this upcoming week. The Pac-12 will be in Vegas starting on Wednesday. I get there Wednesday evening. SC gets a first round bye. And these are like the last shot to make your case for the NCAA tournament. And this is, I've been saying this for a while now, I think you generally agree with me, the amount of parity in these teams that are going to make the tournament is just, to me, off the charts. I think there's clearly the upper echelon, maybe five, six teams, you know, the one seeds and maybe a couple of the two seeds. After that, and then there's a couple of teams like, you know, Arizona and Gonzaga, who SC really does not want to play. But there is just a crazy, crazy amount of parity. And you see this is like, for example, why don't we just hop right into it? There's, you know, there's a resource where this website, bracketmatrix.com, where people post their brackets and who they think is going to make it. A lot of these brackets, and what you see from Lenardi and Palm, are based upon kind of them trying to guess at what the committee is trying to do, which is, you know, kind of an odd way to think about this. So I think Nick decided, you know what, let me just figure out a kind of an objective method, facially neutral method, to you know, project what the actual field should look like. And you've done that. You did put the work in, which I really appreciate. And why don't you tell everyone kind of what you found on this?
Yeah, sure. So it's up on the site. Basically, I just seeded out the teams, up through just all the at-large teams that will be eligible for this. Of course, this list could shrink if there are any conference tournament bid thieves. And I'll try to make a blog post on the site the next few days here on a few, just on who those teams could be, basically. But anyway, yeah, like the idea behind it, like you said, was just to get some sort of formulaic objective criteria. So the way I thought about it is you can kind of have two buckets with this, right? You could have the predictive buckets, which are things like KenPom or Sagarin, which measure margin of victory or efficiencies, basically to, you know, that cracks at how good these teams are, you know, whether they win or lose. And then you have just the results-based criteria, which I just decided to use strength of record as a proxy. It's a, it's on the ESPN BPI site. All it considers is your record and your strength of schedule. So it doesn't consider margin of victory at all, but it's basically what's your record, how strong is your schedule, and then it spits out a number. So if you beat Purdue by 20, it's the same thing as beating Purdue by one. Obviously, if you lose to Oregon State, you know, your strength of schedule is going to go down and your record's going to get worse. So that's going to be a really bad reflection in this formula. So anyway, I decided to weight it 2/3 based on the strength of record and then split the remaining third into the more predictive side, just using, you know, just going a sixth with the Sagarin ratings and then a sixth with KenPom to get this weighted average and then just seeded the teams that way. So obviously, like, reasonable minds can differ. You know, maybe you want it to be 75% results based and 25% predictive. Maybe you really like the predictive stuff and you think it should be closer to 50-50. I just went with 2/3, 1/3, just because I feel like, you know, at the end of the day, wins and losses really do matter a lot, but you still do want like some efficiency, you know, metric in there, because you have these teams with great records like Missouri, for instance, and they're 8-0 in games decided by 5 points or less. So as of right now, they're 16 in the strength of record, which suggests they should be a top 4 seed. But their KenPom's at 56 and their Sagarin's at 59, which suggests they should be out of the tournament. So right now they land on the 8 line, kind of splitting the baby, but, you know, leaning more towards the results based side because they did in fact win these games at the end of the day. So yeah, like I do think it's pretty interesting too, like, to look at the outliers in this model relative to what the bracketologists predict. And, you know, it's, you see teams like in this that are overseeded. Like, I've got Nevada out of the tournament in my fields or in this model, but at the same time, Utah State is a 10 seed. And in, you know, in Palm and Lenardia, I think they both have Utah State out of the tournament. Even though in both the strength of record and the KenPom and Sagarin, they're higher than Nevada in all three of these measures. So you have some clear outliers like that. You know, a lot of these Big Ten teams are getting overseeded. I've got Wisconsin pretty clearly out right now. And Rutgers, like, I you know, we'll see what happens with them when the BPI comes out in the morning, but I had them the third to last team in before they just dropped this home game to Northwestern by double digits. So I presume when that updates, they'll be out of the tournament. So yeah, you definitely have some outliers like that. I've got Providence as the last 10 seed. I haven't seen them that low in most of these projections. So yeah, like the goal again was just to get some objective criteria with it. And I guess I'll just, that's kind of the idea. I'll throw it to you. What are your thoughts on this? Are you more of a predictive guy, a results-based guy? Just what are your kind of overall thoughts on the selection thing?
Right. Well, and also the predictive metrics, I think it needs to be, the predictive metrics are based upon performance at some level, and I think even by the end of the season, KenPom it's entirely within that one season of basketball. Sagarin's not as quite as clear, but I would not expect his predictive algorithm. His algorithm, while it has a predictive function, I think it's almost entirely based upon in-season performance. So, I'd like them both. I might have done, you know, so we discussed this offline, like my version of a, it's something we have to create, but it would essentially try to, instead of using margin of victory, it would calculate based upon when a result of a game was kind of mathematically decided. And the way you could think about that was, okay, for example, on ESPN Gamecast, they keep a running tab. If you look on there of what a team's chances to win the game are, and you'll see the highest it'll go is like 99.9%. That means there's only one chance out of 1,000 that the team with that odds of winning are is going to lose. So that's almost a mathematical certitude. I think if you could take it one more decimal, 99.99%, that would make it essentially, you're not even going to get one outlier within a an entire season of college basketball on average. So that would be my ideal, would just be trying to figure out like you know, based on the algorithm on when a game was mathematically kind of the certain, it was a certainty that one team would win. But failing that, I think what you've done here is actually very helpful because it does place a lot of emphasis on wins and losses, which is very important. It's something that we get kind of gets lost with KenPom. You know, I mean, I think KenPom does for the most part a really good job, and there's a reason Vegas uses it. But yeah, there are times when it just doesn't, you know, it doesn't come out quite like when a team gets hot, you can kind of tell, and you can't really factor that in a lot of times with KenPom or guys coming off of injury. And you can see, like, just looking at your chart, like, for example, the treatment of the Kansas Jayhawks, right? So if you're going to use strength of record, they're number one because they beat the most teams with the best records, essentially. That's what is just kind of taking into account these, you know, as you regret, you know, do regressions to the next and next and next. They're winning the games and their opponents are winning and their opponents' opponents are winning, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But the more you take into account things like margin of victory, the less impressive they look on computer models. And that's what you see with Sagarin them being at number seven and KenPom them being at number nine. They would be in a convention. Now, a lot of this, people have figured this out, and they've kind of tried to gain KenPom a little bit. But certainly if this was like 6 years ago, they would be an excellent candidate for getting upset in the tournament as a one seed. Nevertheless, you know, they're a one seed in your projection, and they're one seed in basically everyone's projection, even I think after they lost yesterday to Texas. So I don't know if we have fully updated project. What, like, I don't have, maybe I should.
I think Lenardi actually moved them to the number one overall seed, even with the loss.
Even with the loss. Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. That's so. It. Even though Houston won today. So that'd be interesting. So now, does Lenardi, did he drop Purdue to those two line and yet move UCLA up, or does he still have UCLA?
That's a good question. Let's see.
So I'm going to compare. So yeah, instead of using, if I can find Lenardi's most recent, here's
he's got the, UCLA as a one now.
So okay. Move them up. Okay. Where are you seeing his?
So he didn't update it. He updated it this morning. So it doesn't factor in the Houston win.
Okay.
But yeah, so he's, but he does have a new bracket as of this morning.
Okay, I do see that, right. He just does, it's not easy to read that way. Okay, so using what I was using before, which is bracket matrix, you know, it's generally a lot of the same, top four, except for UCLA in there, and Purdue is a two, which I think now Lenardi's changed to. I think that's the consensus, and we'll see how those two teams do in their conference tournaments. Texas is at a two, so that's consistent. Baylor, you have UConn in there. So that's interesting. So that's a little bit of the first outlier, right? UConn at a two line.
Yeah.
Arizona at down at three is not necessarily out of the question, but you have Tennessee falling down to four, which I think some people might have them kind of in that range. Marquette is a three. I think that's where everyone kind of has Marquette these days. Gonzaga is a three, probably. And K-State also is a three. Xavier, you have as a four. They have everyone. I think everyone has a four. Indiana, who actually won today. So your list is not all that different than we're seeing so far on the one through four from bracket matrix. Then you get to the five line. You've got Virginia, and which bracket matrix is a four. Michigan State. Okay. Michigan State is a seven. So that's interesting. Michigan State is really up there because I think just how tough their schedule was. Kentucky yeah. on a five line. Miami on a five line, which is kind of a surprise because Miami, you know, is behind SC in KenPom. But, you know, they're up on the five line, and you're – and then A&M is not really a outlier. Duke kind of being there is not a huge outlier. TCU is not an outlier. St. Mary's not really an outlier. Maybe a spot one C line down. You've got West Virginia at a seven, which is very high. I think everyone else seems to have them around like 10 line. So yours is, I think, mainly because of how their performance in KenPom. Iowa State. about not really an outlier. Creighton, where's Creighton on the bracket matrix? There's six. Yeah, so they're about the same. So you also have Auburn bumped up, right? So Auburn's hot.
So that's a team that's really interesting because I think Lenardi for some reason moved them down to last four byes after they beat Tennessee. But Auburn is now top 30 in both strength of record, or I should say in all three of strength of record, Sagarin and KenPom. So they should be clearly in if you look at the resume. But I think with them, like, they've lacked like elite wins, and that's like I guess one thing I've noticed with this is teams that lack the elite wins get penalized, whereas teams like Rutgers, which really should be out of the tournament because they won at Purdue, they have this elite win, and there's almost a bonus for that as opposed to like a really solid win.
So this is okay. So yeah, I think Iowa's is a outlier compared to, and then where's Maryland at on the, let's see.
I've got them as an eight.
Right. And they're also an eight in bracket matrix. So that's another one that you have Arkansas down at 10 as opposed to an eight, wherever I think people have them bumped up, right? Because they do have some bigger wins in the SEC games.
And I do think like the effect here is kind of as we've discussed on prior podcasts. So if you take Arkansas, right, they played Kentucky twice. They won at Rupp and they lost at home. I think if they would have won at home and lost at Rupp, they'd be lower than they are because they had the like high quad one win, right?
Yeah. Now, do you have Pittsburgh in your bracket?
I do not. I think Pittsburgh is the most overseeded team by far in all of these brackets. So they're down at 56 in strength of record. They're 52 in Sagarin and they're 65 in KenPom. So they're not even close. I think they're like my eighth or ninth team out right now. Just not close.
Yeah. So it is fast. I guess the thinking there is that, okay, well, they're participating or they were close to winning the ACC, I guess. Yeah, Lenardi has them as a last four bye. I mean, it is pretty amazing that their numbers are so weak and yet they're in, apparently, not even last four in. What's your on Lenardi's last four in? Mississippi State, Nevada, Wisconsin, Penn State. What's your strongest team there? Is it Mississippi State? Oh, you have them as 11.
It's Mississippi State.
Yeah.
I still do have them in the play-in game, but I've got Nevada out of the field. I've got Wisconsin out of the field.
So you have the biggest error being Utah State right now, right? Is that correct? That people have them the first four out, and you actually have them as a 10 seed.
Yeah. I think they're really strong. They're up at 23 in KenPom now, and I do think what's really interesting too is, you know, if you compare them with Arkansas, I have those teams one spot apart. So I've got Utah State very slightly better in the strength of record. They're very comparable in KenPom, and there is a decent-sized gap in Sagarin. So, like, what you see is the Mountain West. Sagarin hates the Mountain West, and KenPom seems to love the Mountain West.
Yeah, that is interesting. That is interesting.
But even so, right, like, they're pretty similar. Like, both are pretty strong in the, you know, computer models, and they're both similarly situated in the strength of record, with Utah State even being slightly better than Arkansas. But in the bracket matrix, you have Arkansas on the eight line, and you got Utah State out of the tournament. So I think just comparing those two is super interesting. And it just goes to show, like, if you don't have these elite wins, they really try to penalize you.
Yeah. Now, you also, interestingly, your number one just out is a potential spoiler situation with Oral Roberts in the Summit League. If Oral Roberts were not to win their conference tournament, you think they could still be theoretically competitive to get in as an at-large, which would be the spoiler.
Yeah. So I think they'd be deserving, at least of being in the conversation. They're up at 41 in strength of record now. I think the thing that really hurts them is they don't have like marquee wins. So, you know, they're 0-4 in quad one and 1-0 in quad two, but then like they're 5-0 in quad three, 18-0 in quad four. They're beating everybody besides those quad one teams. So that's going to hurt him. I'd be shocked if they did get in, just because of the way, the committees select these teams. I think you almost need to have a quad one win to get consideration these days. And then if you look at like let's say they make it to the Summit tournament final and then they lose the final, I think they'll drop off in strength of record from where they're currently at, which is 41, which would knock them down. So I'd be very surprised if they did get in. But I think they'd definitely be, deserving of at least being in the conversation.
And then I guess one other thing I guess we could talk about is North Carolina. You actually have them in. I know there's been a lot of debate about that. There, I think Lunardi has them next four out. He doesn't even have them in the next four. He actually has Clemson over them. Maybe you can talk about that. Clemson versus North Carolina.
Sure. Yeah. So North Carolina, they happen to be better in all three of the metrics I use. So they're better in strength of record. They are better in KenPom and they're better in Sagarin. They have a very inoffensive resume, I would say. They haven't lost a quad three or quad four game. They have gone 6-3 in quad two. But what is killing them is they've gone 1-9 in quad one. So the top end of their resume is just not there compared to some of these other teams, but they played a pretty strong out of league schedule. They had that quadruple overtime game against Alabama. And I think if they would have won that, then it's a much different conversation around, the bracket people. I think they'd be pretty clearly in at that point. But I would say they're solid. They're good in all three metrics, but not great in any of them. And, I think they're right there in terms of, being worthy of getting a shot at the play-in game. At the end of the day, all these teams are flawed. And I don't think that they're, more flawed than Rutgers or certainly not more flawed than Pitt, which, again, they're worse in all three of these metrics and in the same conference. But I guess because Pitt finished ahead of them in the ACC standings, they want to write off the Pitt's disastrous non-con in which they, lost to VCU and got just absolutely smoked by West Virginia and Michigan.
Okay, so I guess as we head into this, last week or so, do you have any predictions on who you think will make it, who won't make it from the bubble, and what, who might make it in that doesn't deserve it? Do you have any final thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, historically the bracket matrix has been pretty accurate. So I would probably defer to that over what I built. What I built isn't really trying to guess at the teams that are going to make it. It's more like what teams I deem to be deserving. So I guess if I had to guess, Pitt would make it, but they seem totally unworthy. Whereas Utah State, it seems like they're, right on the bubble. And I think they're definitely worthy. I do think North Carolina will have to win games in the ACC tournament to get in, but I think they should be right there. And then Rutgers, I think they're pretty unworthy as well. I'll update it in the morning once the latest strength of record data come out. But I think that, once you factor in their loss to Northwestern, I'm guessing they will be out of the fields. Besides that, I know a lot of Pac-12 fans, they think ASU should be in. I'm not quite there. They have some of the elite marquee wins. They beat Michigan on national TV by, a million points. That helps them in the eyes of, I guess, Pac-12 fans. They have obviously the highly televised, you know, Devin Cambridge half court shot to beat Arizona. But they just lack the middle part of their resume. They lost, I think, 5 home games in conference play. And of course, like their loss to Texas Southern doesn't help things either. And their computer numbers just aren't quite there. But yeah, like, I mean, we'll see. You know, I just think there's so much variance this year where like you'd be shocked at like how one win or one loss like moves these teams. You know, I know that in like Lenardi's world, like he's so hesitant to move teams sometimes, and I don't really understand why. Like one game can drastically change a resume given how close so many of these teams are. But yeah, like conference tournaments will definitely matter and play a role in this. And definitely looking forward to seeing how it shakes out.
Okay, so let's turn to, before we talk about the games, let's turn to some questions from our readers. So we have a whole bunch. So we really appreciate everyone.
Yeah, thanks,
asking
guys.
Questions. So let's start with the MJL 13, because I think he got his in. I don't know if he got his in before. I think he got his in first, right? Do you want to read them or do you want me to read them?
Yeah, I can read them. Okay. So yeah, thanks MJL for sending this in. Really appreciate it. So he says, hey guys, had some questions for the next pod. What are the chances that Boogie can keep up this insane offensive streak he is riding? So Chase, what do you think?
Well, it's interesting because he kind of had an off night last night, quite frankly, and he still scored, 28 points. Look, you never want to say, oh, this guy's going to continue scoring 30 points every game. That's a little, you know. And sometimes they try, players, will, when they're on that path, they'll try to do it, and then, you know, the efficiency goes way down. So, you know, like yet last night, he didn't have quite the same efficiency as he'd had. I think he was 8 for 20 from the field. So he didn't have quite the efficiency. He only had 1 turnover, so that's and 3 assists. So those other numbers were good. He's clearly figured stuff out. He has a lot of confidence with his 3. You could tell the one thing Hurley seemed to be really focused on was trying to disrupt his shot. That, you know, they really planned their entire defense around stopping him, and he was still able to score 28 points. So am I going to say that like he's going to score 30 points from now on? No. But, I mean, he seems to have gained a certain level of confidence, and we'll just have to hope it continues going on. But, like, yes, he has gone to another level as a player. There's no question. And what are your thoughts on that, Nick?
Totally agree. And he's doing it in different ways, too. I think he's gotten a lot more efficient as a driver. And his runner game is so much improved from last year. And you can see it reflected in just his 2-point field goal percentage compared to his career average. So yeah, he's at 49% from 2 on the season. And last year he was at 45, and his second year in Memphis, he was at 42, and his first year in Memphis, he was at 34. So kind of every year he's been getting better from inside the arc, and he's up to a career high from outside the arc, over 39% now. So yeah, I mean, I'd be surprised if he didn't average over 20 points the rest of the way, just with the streak that he's on. Just incredible shot making, and this is like, you know, we've been limited offensively in other ways. I mean, Drew is not 100% pretty clearly with his back issue, and you know, Kobe kind of had an off night last night against the Sun Devils, and they really needed Boogie to carry it home, and he did. So just. Can't say enough about it.
Okay, I'll continue. Staying on Boogie, is there a scenario in which SC can entice him to return for next season with an improved NIL package? The consensus seems to be that he is going to leave, but I don't totally understand why he wouldn't consider return. I get that he probably won't want to play off-ball to Collier, but it doesn't completely rule out. I think he at least have to consider coming back if SC were to make a good offer.
So I can start with this. He did say in his post-game press conference that this was his last year. So that does seem to rule it out. But I do think, like, you know, before he said that, it's definitely an interesting conversation, I guess.
And I think the thing is, we'd start to talk about, you know, when he started getting really hot, it's like, is it worth? So I think one of the reasons it was never really considered was, I think, the idea of recruiting both Collier and Demery is, you know, we're going to have an opening at point guard. We're not going to have a point guard. And the understanding amongst everyone was that Boogie was leaving. And then he started to get pretty hot. You're like, wow, I wonder if like there's a scenario where you'd want him to come back. I think he's gotten so good now that he may be actually playing himself into, I don't know, if a draft spot that's tough, but at least consideration. He's putting up some big numbers. He's going to have the opportunity to put some big numbers in the NCAA tournament where you could turn some heads and get some interest from the NBA guys. He is, you know, he's an odd guy for the NBA because he's not really a true point guard and he's a little bit short for a two spot, but you know, he's a self, he can initiate offense on his own. So you can definitely see a scenario where you might want to take a shot on someone like him. He can be instant offense. And I certainly think he can extend his range to the NBA level. Now, does that mean he's going to get drafted? I think it's more likely than not he won't. But it seems to be now, okay, this is the time to make the play for the NBA is my guess. So I would be very surprised just the way, how well he's played if that's still on the table. That's at least my thought there. You want to continue on?
Yeah, sure. So next up, MJ says, moving to Vince, what can we expect from him for the remainder of the season? He's obviously very raw and is still trying to catch up, but he can really make a difference when playing well, considering he's our only center that can score at all. He's been quiet during our last three series, but it would be really nice to get him going again. So Chase, I'll kick.
Well, I think the first question is whether or not he's going to be healthy. I mean, he had a back issue, back spasm, but I guess, which kept him out of last night's game. You know, he's hit a little bit of a wall himself. That being said, it is certainly not something, it would not be a big surprise. We get to the NCAA tournament and he has a big game. That would not surprise me at all. Nick, you have any thoughts there?
I completely agree. What I'll say add to that too is that we got a really good game out of Kajani against ASU, probably the best game of his career. So that might take a little bit of the pressure off of Vince, and I don't think you necessarily have to rush him back right away. You can let the back fully heal and then maybe throw him out as an energizer bunny to try to get, you know, like a repeat of the game down in Tempe.
On recruiting, have you guys heard anything about Bronny's recruitment? He's developed to the point that he's an obvious take, but I haven't heard anything since announcing his final three. The problem I see with Bronny and USC is the roster fit with a handful of guards next year already locked in for big minutes. Collier, Demery, Kobe, and Reese at a minimum. I'll let you take that.
Yeah. I do think like there is some debate whether he is a take. You know, we did debate this on the podcast a little while back. If you're interested in that, feel free to go check out that episode. I'm more on the side of take him, and I know you're more on the side of you know, pass on him. But either way, like I do agree, like there is a lot of we do have a lot of guards, and I think there's definitely a case towards, you know, if you take a guard, take a transfer guard, you could, you know, bid on Oziah. I have not heard anything on the recruitment, though. It does seem like it's extremely quiet. I know The Athletic put out a piece on this and said that schools that are interested have to set up a time with the publicist during a specific time on a certain day just to speak to the mom. And you don't have access to speak to Bronny and certainly not LeBron. So there are just lots of hoops to jump through to recruit him in the first place. And my sense is it's not going to happen. But, you know, there's just such little news out of it that you can't totally rule it out.
Yeah, so I think at this point, from what I've heard, it didn't seem like we were extremely engaged. I think there'd been some communications back and forth, maybe indirectly. I don't know if we're extremely engaged. I would be surprised if we were. I've also heard that I don't think Demery would appreciate if we took him, because he viewed him as potential competition as position. My preference is, quite frankly, like, you know, we need shooting. I think Bronny would offer shooting. I would prefer to take a transfer. That's my thought on that. I also wanted to note the difference in atmospheres in the games against the Arizona schools. I was at both games, and the Arizona crowd was totally dead. mainly because almost three quarters of the upper bowl was completely vacant. I did notice on Twitter that, it was empty just up to there. He says it was embarrassing. I agree. I mean, I think the students showed up, but the rest of the fans did not. The Arizona State game, on the other hand, was much better. Attendance was up 17% from the Arizona game. I guess that's due to the fact it was a weekend, I'm guessing, because it was Saturday.
Rather. Probably.
Yeah. The difference being the upper bowl was filled with groups, schools, and organizations that the athletic department had clearly given tickets to. Well, that's good news. Why doesn't the administration do this more? I'm not supposed to be using foul language here. I have no effing clue why they don't do it more. They should be doing it all the time. Getting more people at Galen should be a priority. Yes, 100% that. And also shouldn't be very difficult. Have student giveaways, give ticket packages to large groups to show up, cut the price of the upper bowl tickets and advertise the team. Galen's is a great atmosphere when filled, not so much when empty. Thanks and keep picking up the content. So I completely agree. I don't know. Do you have anything to add on that point there, Nick?
Totally agree. I think his point about ticket prices is underrated too. They are expensive. Like, especially for these games when you're not selling out. I mean, there's no point in, charging more than $5 for like an upper bowl ticket if it's against a low level opponent or if it's, a non marquee game on a weekday night. So, like, I think they should cut prices for sure. And then, giving away tickets to groups, like engaging the local community, like, if you get more local buy in, it just becomes more of a thing to do to, go see a USC basketball game. And right now it's certainly not the thing to do on campus. I have my younger sister goes there and like, she had like an invite on the night of the Arizona game and she would have gone, to that if she didn't have the invite, but the frats don't care. They're having invites on the nights of the Arizona games. They certainly like wouldn't on the night of a football game. Right. So it is great that you're getting student support this year. Like it's not as much as it should be, I think, certainly not as much as football, but like, if you can continue to make it like a thing to do on campus and a thing to do in the broader community, I think that'd help a lot.
Yep. Okay. So in the Trojan 2021 has some follow-up questions. Who has been the more valuable member to their team? Amari Bailey or Trey White, what you're calling that one there?
I would say Trey White because I think UCLA is deep enough where Bailey hasn't really mattered all that much. There is an argument that Bailey's had a better year, but I think I would push back against that too, just with his high turnover percentage. Even with Trey's like general inefficiency on offense, especially from the 3-point line, I think he's had a better year.
Yeah. So Bailey missed, eight games. UCLA did lose two of those to US two. Sorry, they didn't not play an eight game. He missed seven games, and the only game UCLA lost was at McHale. It's unclear to me that UCLA would have won that game with Amari Bailey. Otherwise, my vote would 100% be for Trey White. Just offensive rating, by the way, Amari Bailey 93.2 overall, 92.8 in Pac-12 play. And I know we get to make fun of Trey sometimes with his inefficiencies, but I mean, the truth is for the season, he's 105 offensive rating and 104.9 in conference offensive rating. Because last night's game, he finished the season, regular season with above 50% shooting from a 2-point range in conference play. His 3-point shooting is dreadful, obviously, but in conference play, he shot over 50% from inside the arc. So I think that's impressive. So yeah, I don't even think it's close. I think that Trey White was much, much, much more valuable. If SC didn't have Trey White, I think we would have been up, S Creek quite a few times. Okay. How does UCLA do a better job of defending Arizona than we do? Would love to solve this puzzle. Can you blame a little of our game on foul trouble, keeping Kobe Boogie out? But so many other baskets look easy. Okay, I'll throw the. I have some thoughts on this, Nick. It's a great question. But I'll let you answer first.
Yeah, I think we even might have slightly different answers on this. Although I think they'll be similar. They just have better defensive players, first of all. I mean, Jalen Clark, and we should mention that he tore his Achilles, and I was really bummed to hear that. And, you know, I know he's a UCLA guy, but great player and great kid by all accounts. You hate to see that happen to anybody. But he was such an, he's such an elite wing defender for them, ninth in the country in steal rate. Kind of like their version of Kobe Johnson in a way. You know, he, his like BPM and some of the stats are even superior to Kobe. I think that's, you know, a debate between those two, but he's an awesome defender. Jaime Jaquez is a terrific defender. He's smart. He doesn't buy on a lot of shot fakes. He rebounds really well. He gets steals. So just a super high IQ player. Singleton, like, even for his lack of foot speed, like, gets some steals and is always in the right position. And then you add in like Tiger, who's like no slouch either on the defensive end, like pretty high steal guy. You know, is kind of like compact and like functionally strong enough where you can't really move him off the spot as a guard. And then, you know, you have Bona on your back line who, kind of like Josh Morgan, blocks a ton of shots and is an even better rebounder than Josh Morgan. So they're better. They're certainly better on the glass than we are. I think that's the first thing. They do force more turnovers because in addition to Clark, Jaquez, Campbell, even Bailey and Singleton all have steal rates north of two. You know, if you look at RD, Kobe's got a steal rate north of two at 4.5, but Boogie is the only other guy who's north of two on our team. So they get more turnovers. They're better on the glass. And, you know, we do have a better effective field goal percentage defense, but it just doesn't, you know, make up for the lack of rebounding I guess like ability to create turnovers. So I do think like a lot of, some of it is philosophical in the way that, you know, they're more concerned about guarding the three. But a lot of it is, you know, personnel driven, and experienced teams tend to be much better on defense than inexperienced teams. And they're both experienced. And then you combine that with the athleticism that they have and mix, you know, emphasis on that end of the court, and you know, you get the number two defense in the country.
So I'm going to I think Nick took a broader view of this. I'm going to take a very narrow view of this and say, just let's do the games from this week. Thursday night at Galen, Saturday night at Pauley. What are the differences between the two games? And they can be, and by the way, everything Nick just said applies, but I'll give you very specific narrow context here. The differences between the two games can be summed up with four words: Courtney Ramey, Cedric Henderson. So, these are basically Arizona's like wing players, you know, kind of like they're scoring wing players. Now they have other ones, but these guys are kind of like, you know, doing a lot of scoring, not necessarily like in the post, things like that. And not necessarily as primary ball handlers like Creasa Boswell. So against us, Ramey hit three threes and was 3 for 4 from inside the arc for a total of 16 points on 11 field goal attempts. He had three turnovers. Cedric Henderson scored only 7 points, but he did that on just 7 shots against us, 1 for 1 from three. Against UCLA, Ramey was 0 for 4 from three. 2 for 7 from inside the arc, 4 points on 11 field goal attempts, 6 turnovers. So he was absolutely dreadful. Absolutely dreadful. Now, is that all Jalen Clark? I mean, probably a lot of it is Jalen Clark, but clearly the guards, the men guarding those wing players for UCLA are just superior at doing that. Cedric Henderson, while he was mediocre against us at Galen, he was 1 for 6 from the field against UCLA with a turnover, only 1 rebound in 31 minutes of play, by the way. So these guys did not do anything really to help the cause against UCLA. And they were, especially in the case of Ramey, you know, largely responsible for the kind of consistent lead Arizona had against us. So, yeah, if we could figure out a way to guard Ramey without taking away from the rest of our defense, that would go a long way to really effectively reducing, you know, the amount of points Arizona's been able to score against us. Now, we have struggled mightily, and we talked about it many times in this podcast, to stop other teams from getting offensive rebounds. We only gave up 9 offensive rebounds to Arizona, which is not great, but it, I mean, it was much worse against Arizona State. We actually got 15 offensive rebounds against Arizona. So we out-rebounded them for the game, 38 to 33. UCLA, they out-rebounded Arizona as well, but, you know, they were a little better. They only gave up 6 offensive rebounds. But the difference there, the discrepancy is not really much. I mean, the real difference in the game, really, if you look at it, is the turnovers. Those 6 turnovers that Ramey had really contributed to a lot of the difference in the game. Tubelis only had 1 turnover against us. He had 4 against UCLA. So that's kind of like what they were able to turn over Arizona better, and they were able to shut down Ramey and Cedric Henderson. With 7-8 seeds currently in Lenardi Palms or Nick's bracket, scare would which of them scare encourage you the most as a matchup now? On a 7-10 matchup. Okay. 7 seeds like Michigan State and Iowa don't really scare me. Kentucky does, Missouri doesn't, et cetera, et cetera. So let's go to those. Rather than using yours, because I think, you know, we'll just go with like who we expect to be the 7 seed. So we'll, you know, use Lenardi's for now. So Lenardi's 7 seeds as we look at this today, or Kentucky, Northwestern. Now Northwestern is going to drop, right? They won't drop. Northwestern, Kentucky, Northwestern, A&M. Texas A&M, and Iowa. Of those, I think Iowa is the weakest, frankly. I think either Texas A&M or Kentucky could be problematic. Although I think they're beatable for us for sure. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, and I would lead on the side of, whatever team is higher in the predictive metrics, they're probably going to be better than the teams that are lower in the predictive metrics. So I would use that as a guide, and then maybe factor in like, okay, how solid are they on both sides of the ball? Because teams that are like either really, really good on offense and bad on defense, or the flip side, those teams oftentimes flame out in the tournament. So Iowa would fit that criteria, right? They're really good on offense and horrific on defense. So I wouldn't mind playing them. And then the other team, like within that group, Northwestern, they're lower in the predictive metrics. And they also don't have like, you know, a bunch of NBA guys on that team. So I wouldn't mind playing them either. Kentucky is pretty high in the predictive metrics, and they've got some NBA talent, and they have a decent trajectory. So would not want them. And then A&M has a great trajectory. They've been awesome in conference play. And they're also pretty good on both offense and defense. So wouldn't want them either. But, you know, besides that, like, you know, I think Michigan State's solid. I do agree, like, watching them, they don't really pop. So, like, while they are 28 in KenPom and they're top 40 on both offense and defense, they kind of seem like a, you know, maybe win their first game and then probably lose in round 2 type of team. I'll throw out one more team too. Memphis, I think, is legit. Really like Kendrick Davis, their point guard. They're tough. They're good on offense and defense. They were right there with Houston today. And I think a lot of Houston, but they like, you know, they very easily could have won that game against Houston today. So I would watch out for them as well.
Yeah, I think the one good news with them is I don't think we'll be positioned to probably match up with them, because they're probably going to be like us, a 10 seed or 9 seed. So it's unlikely we'd be facing them. The one other team that I thought just maybe worth mentioning, Creighton will probably be on the 6th line, but if for some reason they were to fall to a 7th line, that's a potentially scary team. David again has some questions. So thank you again, David. Will you guys please take a few minutes to discuss potential second round matchups in the NCAA tournament? Okay, well, I guess we just did that, right? Second round matchups. So we're talking about, for comparison, we seem to match up well with UCLA. So this would be like the 2 and the 3 seeds, right? So if we're a 10, And we were to win, we play a two, which is looking to be likely to be Purdue. Arizona would not be in our bracket, I think. Texas, most likely next. Potentially Baylor, potentially Marquette. Kansas State lost today, right? So, or yesterday. So I'm guessing that the 4-2 seeds, my guess is going to be Purdue, Texas, Baylor, Marquette. But it might be Arizona too. So is that, and do you think I've got those? Those are the five possibilities. Would you agree with that?
I think that's right.
Okay. Yeah. Gonzaga, I guess, is good enough. Well, we wouldn't want it to be Gonzaga.
They could, like, at Gonzaga, and then, like, maybe UConn could sneak up there, but I think that's more of a long shot at this point.
Yeah. So, of those teams, since we're Arizona's not really, we can't be matched up against them. I think Texas is a tricky matchup for us. They have very mature players. They're going to be really tough on the boards. Marquette is a really efficient team, and people just haven't watched a lot of them. And that team definitely make me nervous. I think they're good. I actually think Purdue is a team that we actually could match up pretty nicely with. Not that, you know, Joshua Morgan is going to stop Zach Edey. I don't think that's the case, but I think when you start looking at, like, the rest of the players there, you know, especially with Boogie, like, if we're going to get a lot of our points from, like, outside shooting, you know, Zach Edey wouldn't necessarily be as big of a factor. So I'm not terribly scared of Purdue. I think of those teams, the teams I would be most scared of the ones I mentioned, was probably be Texas and then maybe Marquette. Well, I know. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, like, Purdue is my initial thought for, like, scariest team, just because I think Edey could go for, like, 35-20 against us. But kind of, like, thinking about it, you know, a little bit more, he might go for 35-20 and we could still beat them. I mean, he is, he can't really move. If you ever got him switched on to Boogie could basically get an uncontested three whenever he wanted. And the way he's shooting that, you know, that's a very high percentage shot. So we could definitely score with them, I think, and that could be really interesting. And he kind of has, like, the twitch, I think, to hang with Braden Smith in that matchup. And, you know, you could throw Kobe on Fletcher Lawyer, whose efficiency's kind of gone down recently. I think he's below 40% from the field now. But, you know, if you put Kobe on him, then, you know, that can go down even more. You know, besides that, they play, like, these other guys who are decent shooters, but, like, don't really offer that much else. So they're not really scaring you. So I do kind of agree with you. Like, that wouldn't be a terrible matchup for us. Texas is the best team, I think, of those teams. You know, they're top 20 in both offense and defense. They're just really tough. I mean, they're experienced. They're not going to beat themselves. They take care of the ball. Tyrese Hunter can, you know, he can pressure the ball pretty well. He's had, like, a solid year, and they're just, like, they're good at every position. Like, they're Marcus Carr's had a career year. Timmy Allen is, like, this old vet who, you know, is just going to be solid, and he can pass too. And Serge Ibari Rice has had, like, a super crazy efficient year. So I would say they're just, you know, they just don't have any, like, weak spots on their roster. Even when they put Dylan Mitchell in, he's a zero on offense, but, you know, definitely a good rebounder and good defender too. So they are tough. I actually wouldn't mind seeing Baylor. Like, I think Baylor has just been so up and down. They're, you know, they're down at 14 in the in KenPom now. They're 90 in defense, so they don't guard you. And, you know, if you, you know, do get a slightly off shooting night from Adam Flagler or LJ Cryer or one of those guys, you could pretty easily, like, open up a lead on them. Like, they lost by 15 at home to Iowa State on senior night. So I wouldn't mind that matchup. Marquette, they don't have the NBA guys to scare you. They're so good on offense, but again, like, their defense is 68. So I think we could score on them. And, you know, maybe they get a bunch of offensive rebounds and second chances against us, but they're not a great offensive rebounding team. So they really win with the whole Shaka style. They turn you over a ton, and then they don't turn the ball over themselves, and they also shoot a very efficient percentage. So I actually think that kind of plays into, you know, what we do pretty well. We take care of the ball pretty well, or at least we have recently. And, you know, they're not like a dynamite rebounding team. So I wouldn't hate that matchup. I guess we could also talk about the one seeds too, just, you know, in case we get like an 8 or 9. I think Houston would be a huge problem for us. They are so good on the glass. They're physical. They have, you know, they pressure you on D. And then on top of that, they're like, you know, pretty efficient too on offense. I mean, it goes without saying they have the number 5 offense and the number 6 defense. They're just really good. I think that'd be a huge problem for us. We wouldn't get matched up against UCLA. Bama, you know, I actually wouldn't mind playing them because they're such a high variance team. Just because they shoot so many threes. So if you catch them on a night like A&M where Brandon Miller goes, you know, I think he was, let's see, 7 for 23 from the field with 5 turnovers. Yeah, like you could definitely beat them. I don't think it's likely, but the path is there. And with Kansas, like I don't really fear Kansas either. I mean, I saw them in the Bahamas. Wisconsin, you know, took them to overtime. They won on like a last second put back by Bobby Pettiford, who's not really even in their rotation now. They don't have overwhelming talent. I think Self has just done a great job of getting guys to find their role, and the pieces like generally fit. But I think he's kind of like maxed that team out almost in the regular season. And I don't buy like Jalen Wilson as a guy that can take over a game. So I guess long story short, Texas, I think, would be tough. Houston, I think, would be very tough. And Bama would be on the harder side for sure. But I think a lot of these other teams we can compete with.
Yeah, I would not want to face Bama. I mean, especially with both Quinterly and Sears. I just don't see how, you know, us being able to guard both of those guys. Quinterly really knows how to get downhill. Sears can, you know, can basically get himself open for threes anytime he wants. And then the problem is, like, you know, if you try to put Kobe on one of those two guys, who in the world is going to guard Brandon Miller? I mean, so that, you know, you really run into problems trying to guard all those guys. I would not want to play Alabama. I think of the four, I think they're a great team. I have endless respect for what Bill Self has done. I think of the four of those three, I guess, number one seeds, the one we just happen to match up best is Kansas. You know, that's not a dig at Kansas. It's probably just the one we bet match up best with. Okay, so thanks everyone for putting questions in. Please continue to do so. I guess we can talk about the game a little bit. I guess mine. You know, there's so much to say about the Arizona game. I don't want to, you know, rehash a whole bunch of old stuff. I have to say I was not particularly impressed with what we did against Arizona. I know we've already touched upon this when someone asked a question, but like it didn't seem to me that we were particularly prepared to play them. And I know we scouted them and all that stuff. But I mean, look, just the way we – we looked much, much better on defense against Arizona State. We seem to have them very well scouted. Maybe I'm wrong about this. I really feel like this, that week was devoted making sure we can get that win against Arizona State, maybe even writing off Arizona and just kind of, you know, preparing, but not preparing deeply. We didn't seem like there was a lot of like clever thought that went into how to like minimize the impact that Arizona has. And maybe we just can't do it. You know, maybe that's a problem. We just can't do it. But you know, I wasn't, it really took some heroics from Boogie to kind of finally cut the lead below 10. We never were getting blown out, but it wasn't really truly competitive game. And then we got some late shots, but you know, they were clearly, you know, kind of favored to win pretty much the whole time. I think they were the entire second half. They were up at, around hovering between 80% and, you know, 90% to win. So I wasn't thrilled with what we did in that game. Arizona State, look, we we were really taking care of business, and it was looking really nice. And we were shorthanded. I mean, Drew was clearly hurt. There's no question about that. He was not himself. But Kobe was just having an off game. He was having an off game, and guys stepped up. Trey White stepped up, had a great game, and Kajani Wright stepped up and had a really great game. And we were taking care of business. And then the whole situation with Reese pushing Cambridge in the back, knocking him down, caused that whole situation kind of spiral things. Caused
can't do it. Can't do it.
Yeah, there's no excuse. There's just no excuse to ever let something like that happen under any circumstances. And especially at the time of the game, just don't. I mean, because we would have, like, they might have made the run at the end, but we would have won comfortably, like an eight point just difference. They never would have gotten as close as they did. And it just unfortunately you can't have that happen. You can't have that happen, especially when, like, a guy, when we're already shorthanded, we don't have Vince for the game. Joshua Morgan's in foul trouble, barely plays any minutes. Kobe's having his worst game in forever. And Reese got the start. He got the start in the game and then does that. So that was really disappointing. But look, we pulled it off. And I think that at the end of the day, that's what we're going to remember.
Yeah, I'm glad we got through it. I think on the Arizona game, I maybe I'm a little bit more optimistic than you on it, but I do agree with you. Like, it never had the feel of a competitive game in the second half, right? Even though we cut it to six or whatever, it wasn't as close as the score indicated. What I would say though is the Kobe third foul call really changed things. Like, we got pretty thoroughly dominated in the second half of the first half, the second 10 minutes when he wasn't on the floor. I think they won the game, or won that portion of the game, by seven. And I think it was such a bad call on him. Like, even the first few were I think pretty questionable, but it was just the Pac-12 refs taking over the game. Whereas Kirk Risa can slide under anybody and get a charge call. Right. So I think it was completely absurd the way they called the game. And I think that would have, I'm not saying we would have won the game per se, but I think that would have helped for sure. The other thing too is Drew he wasn't just physically hurt against Arizona State. He was physically hurt against Arizona. I mean, he could barely move, especially in that second half, and he didn't look right at all. And again, I don't know if we pull it off, but if you have Kobe playing 30 minutes instead of 23 and you have, a more healthy Drew, I think it's at least more interesting. And at the end of the day, we still only lost by six. So, I do think it's a bad matchup. Tubelis is a great player. He had 24 and 10, and then he went to Pauly and had 25 and 10 against us. Then he had 24 and 10 against UCLA. So, really good player. And then credit Rainey and their role guys. I think Boswell played a very good game. He looked poised, and I think he's going to be a really good college guard for them. And Rainey stepped up as well. So credit to those guys. I do think UCLA has better wing defender personnel to handle that than we did. And, as you mentioned, Rainey and Cedric Henderson were really the difference between the way that they guarded Arizona versus the way we guarded Arizona. But we'll see what happens. I mean, we'll get a third shot at these guys in Vegas, most likely, if we're able to beat the winner of ASU and Oregon State. And, we'll see what happens. Arizona will obviously be favored, and they're a very good team, but you never know with these things. So.
I don't know if we'll have a chance to podcast again before we're leaving to go to Vegas, both of you, you and me. So let's just really briefly, what are you thinking? What are your picks? I mean, hanging over this now is Jalen Clark will not be playing for UCLA. And I do think that matters. And I think it might matter for me. It might matter right in that quarterfinal matchup or semifinal matchup with Oregon potentially. But do you have thoughts?
Yeah, I think Oregon Washington State is probably the most intriguing matchup there, at least in the second round. I guess do you want to pick the whole tournament? We can just look
through let's do it.
Okay. So the 5-12 game is Washington State against Cal, And I presume we both like Washington State Big.
I would presume you're right.
Okay. Moving on, we got ASU against Oregon State. I'll just go ahead and pick that. I like ASU. I think they'll be very desperate in that game. It's because they still think they can make the tournament. I think they'll just overwhelm Oregon State a little bit with athleticism and effort.
I agree. Yes.
Okay. Next up, we've got Utah against Stanford. I like Stanford by 5 to 10. What do you think?
I like Stanford also.
Okay. So got Stanford moving on. And then maybe the most interesting matchup, Colorado against Washington. Ooh, I just trust Colorado a little bit more.
And yeah, I like Colorado. I like Colorado also.
Yeah, it's hard to trust Washington's defense. Okay, so then in the next round, we've got, I guess we can start with Oregon and Washington State. What do you think?
I am going to take, this is tough, because Washington State has won. Now, what have they won, like 7 games in a row?
They've won 6 straight, but do keep in mind a lot of it is the function of the schedule. Those six are Washington home, Oregon State home, Oregon home, at Stanford, at Cal, at Washington.
My pick would be Oregon, but I'm not confident at all.
Yeah, same here. I think Oregon probably thinks they can really win this thing. And I guess Washington State does too. They're tricky. I think it's a close game either way, but yeah. I'll lean Oregon. Okay, next up we have the rematch, SC against ASU.
Subject to injuries and whether or not Drew plays, I do think SC would win here.
I agree. Good news on that front. Drew did say in his press conference that he's had the same thing, I think, either earlier in the season or in the off season. And he said it's typically a thing where you let it rest for like 3 or 4 days, and then he's back to 100%, that he expects to be 100% in Las Vegas. We'll see on that. But if we do get a pretty healthy Drew Peterson, I think that would help a lot, because he was looking really he really hurt us in a lot of ways that ASU game, and props him for gutting it out. But it would be a huge boon to the team to get him healthy. But I agree. I think we match up pretty well against them. So I'll take us. Next up, we've got Arizona against Stanford.
You know, I'm actually, this is like the perfect opportunity to pick an upset here, Stanford over Arizona. But I've gotten in trouble doing that in the past. I'm just going to go with Arizona.
Yeah, I like Arizona too. And Arizona coming off a loss has been dynamite. We've caught them off losses both times this year, unfortunately. But they're coming off a loss to UCLA. So I will pick them to get through as well. Okay, the last quarterfinal matchup, we've got UCLA against Colorado.
I think if it's Washington, it's Colorado. I think UCLA wins.
I do too. I don't think they'll need Jalen Clark for that matchup. Colorado doesn't have like a wing scorer, so don't think it'll really hurt them too much there. Okay, so we've got the semifinals. We've got all favorites. So I guess we can start with UCLA against Oregon.
I'm actually going to pick Oregon here. And I actually might pick Washington State if it was Washington State. I think they make their move here.
Okay. I'll go with UCLA. I just trust Hawkes to get it done like he's done all year. And then we've got round three, USC against Arizona.
I can't. I've seen it. I've seen too much of this. I'm going with Arizona.
I like Arizona as well. We would just need so much shot making to win the game or to figure something out defensively that we haven't done against them in recent memory. Your final is Arizona playing Oregon. Oregon is playing for the automatic bid.
Yeah, so under my final, I have Arizona winning. Under your final, I'd have UCLA winning.
Okay, and then my final is Arizona against UCLA, and I'm going to take the Bruins. I think they're a pretty good matchup with Arizona, and you know, and so the Arizona like rule guards show it against, UCLA. They didn't really do it in the first matchup either, even though they won, but UCLA just couldn't get anything going offensively. I'll take UCLA. So you got Arizona winning. I've got UCLA winning. I think that's a pretty good reflection of kind of what we think of these teams. And now before the season, I think UCLA, that's you picked Arizona. You're an Arizona guy. So it's funny how it worked out that way. I guess anything you want to close with here?
You know, I was just thinking that. I don't think I've got anything else. I think hopefully it'll be a fun time in Vegas. Hopefully we take care of business against Arizona State or Oregon State, whoever we play there. And hopefully our guys get healthy.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's all I got too. And I guess fight on, everybody.
Fight on, everyone.